You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe Podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastion.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
I think that trying to go into this world with your own bird dog can be very humbling and daunting. And not knowing, like I did, like we all did at one point in time, can be very daunting. And for women, and a lot of chapters, it's a lot of men. We have a lot of females in our chapter, which is wonderful. But I think that maybe we just all need to encourage each other a little bit more and say, hey, you know, we can help with this, or we've done this before. You want me to go out in the field and walk with you, or, you know, just encouraging women.
Purina Pro Plan is always looking for a way to help dogs be their best, and that's why they're always advancing by optimizing and diversifying their formulas for our dog's specific needs and preferences. I was just notified this morning that Pro Plan has expanded its sensitive skin and stomach formulas, which are specific to breed sizes and life stages. So if you have a dog with allergies, sensitivities, or irritable skin and ears, check out those new options, or come visit me, the vets, the scientists, and experts at the Pro Plan booth at the Ducks Unlimited Expo this weekend in Fort Worth, Texas. We'd love to discuss which formula is the best option for you and your dog. Also at DUX this weekend, Boss Shot Shells. Stop in and see Lee Chose and the gang at Boss to find out more about their copper-plated devastation and the exciting things they have in the works right now. And I'm fairly certain Dakota 283 will also be bringing the heat at DUX with their lineup of products providing unparalleled protection for our dogs. This is a great opportunity to get your hands on the kennels to feel the durability and what's keeping my dogs and many others safe during travel. Siren Shotguns for Women. They won't be at DUX, but they are out and about doing demo events again regularly. This would be a great opportunity to try out that Tempio or D2 you've been jonesing, or the Waterfowler like I've been hoping to get my hands on. So be sure to check out the events page at SirenUSA.com or on their Siren Facebook page and owners group for upcoming events. My guest today is Stacy Horst. Stacy is a great example of the reactivation component of R3. She grew up hunting everything in Nebraska, then after moving, college, and life, she got back into it. And boy, did she dive deep into bird dogs. Stacy has trained and tested in 3 different testing systems, NAVDA, the VDD GNA, and AKC. Hear how Stacy talks about her successes, lessons learned, and how she encourages women to train, test, and hunt their dogs. All right, let's get after it. Hey, Stacy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Courtney.
Yes, I'm pretty excited about this. I've had a couple friends and good sources say, you really need to talk to Stacy Horst. She is awesome, doing amazing things with her dogs. So I'm really excited to dig into who you are and what you're doing today.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And yeah.
Cool. So kick us off with who you are and what you're doing and where you're coming to us from today.
So I currently live in Vass, North Carolina, or outside of Vass. It's like a little country area, North Carolina, not too far from Fort Bragg. And my husband and I, we have 3 short hairs. We have an 8-year-old that's named Emma, and she is our first versatile champion and our only versatile champion that we own.
Okay.
And then we have Arbor, and she is a puppy out of our Emma. And then we have Porter, and Porter is one of our other puppies, and he is out of her King Kennel.
Okay, nice. And that is from Angie, right?
That's correct. Angie.
Yeah. Coming. Perfect. So was Emma your very first bird dog?
She was not.
Okay.
We had 2 others prior to Emma. And when I started coming to the state of North Carolina to see my husband, I met his first bird dog, which was Dakota. And then we were married, and we shortly after that, we had another dog out of him. His name was Duke. And unfortunately, they had both passed, but we had the dogs. I think Blake got Dakota when he was maybe 6 months old.
Okay.
And then Duke as a puppy. So we had two males prior, mm-hmm. which was a little different for us because they were both field trial dogs. And we did not run field trials with them. We actually had them sent to a trainer down in Georgia for 2 months. And when they got back from being trained, they were woe broke and they were also force fetched.
Was it a field trial trainer that you sent them to?
Yes.
Okay. So did you ever give field trials a try?
No.
Okay. I'm trying to see what would happen here. You got field trial dogs. You went to a field trial trainer and then you're like, well, that's not what we want to do.
Right. So we hunted them
okay.
Here in North Carolina mm-hmm. and with the limited access of birds. I mean, we duck hunted and did a little duck hunting, but not so much with those two. And then we would do a little preserve hunting, here and there, but that's really all we did. And during that time in our lives, it was quite hectic and my husband was deployed a lot and, I was traveling a lot for work. So it wasn't as conducive for us to be able to do really what we should have done and what we needed to do with those two dogs.
Okay. And were those two short hairs as well?
Yes.
Okay. So why the short hairs? Why that breed?
Well, I just fell in love with both Dakota and Duke. And my husband grew up in South Dakota. And he was used to short hairs being around when he would go out and hunt. He never owned one prior to Dakota. One of his friends that he was in the military with had short hairs. In fact, that's how we found out about the trainer, was because he had his short hairs trained by the same individual.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how long have you personally been hunting?
I've been hunting since I grew up hunting.
Okay.
So I remember at a very young age going, I mean, we always had our own BB guns, and our dad, you know, taught us to shoot at a young age. And we grew up on a farm in the middle of nowhere in Nebraska. And so it was just kind of part of our lifestyle.
And you were upland bird hunting? Were you big game hunting? What did you all do?
All of it. And fishing and you name it, we did it.
So did you have bird dogs growing up?
We had golden retrievers. And we would pheasant hunt a lot with them there in Nebraska.
Okay. Is that your favorite species to hunt is pheasant?
Well, I mean, for uplands, mm-hmm. I would say yes, but that's only because I really want to go chukar hunting. And I can't say that would be my favorite until I'm able to, you know, be able to go out and hopefully conquer that hunt. but I love the pheasant hunt, mm-hmm. and grouse hunts. But yeah, I grew up doing it. So, you know, it's, I guess, a little part of me.
Mm-hmm. So what all species have you hunted?
As far as birds
yeah.
are concerned?
Yep.
I have pheasant hunted, grouse. I went hunting for huns last year in North Dakota.
Nice.
And ducks.
Okay. Do you guys have any in your area in North Carolina, any wild bird hunting that you can do there?
Yeah, there's woodcock around, not too far from where I live, actually. There's some better spots. And then grouse up in the mountain areas. And then obviously we have ducks and we hunt ducks a lot.
Okay.
We have access to a pretty nice swamp about 5 miles from where we live. And so we take our dogs duck hunting quite a bit.
Nice. So they are pretty versatile short hairs then in what your training is and your testing for is what you're actually utilizing them for.
That's correct. And I think that that's important, not only for the dogs, but also for us as handlers to see all the work that we do paying off after, you know, while we're hunting and watching the dogs work when we're out there. It's very awesome to see.
Mm-hmm. Being that that is the waterfall portion of it is so important for you guys specifically, can you give us a little bit of a rundown on how you are doing that first water introduction with puppies and maybe what age you like to introduce them to it?
Well, with just water in general, I'll be honest with you, our first nabbed dog, which is Emma, mm-hmm. our 8-year-old, she hated water. And it took us a long time to get her to like water. But we would duck hunt her, but she always had a vest on. And okay. I don't know if that, you know, made a difference or not. But eventually, Emma decided that she liked water. And I don't know what made her change her mind, but now we have no problems,
sure.
Obviously. But with the puppies, we like to introduce them pretty young. I know with Porter, when he was, I guess it was in 19, that was when we had a lot of the algae bloom problems with the water. And I was so nervous about allowing him to get into any water. And obviously, we always check the water before we let the dogs in it, but I was overly cautious, and I wanted to make sure that he had all of his shots and everything before I would allow him to get into the water. Hmm. And then we do a lot of work with bumpers prior to on the ground, getting them excited about the bumpers, knowing what they have to do for the NABDA natural ability test. And so that they will want to enter the water, and we'll take them to different ponds that are really shallow and throw a bumper in and not expect them to swim right away, but just to try and get them comfortable with the water, gradually throw the bumper out farther, and typically they'll get it and have no issues.
Do you just use bumpers until they're a certain age, or do you add birds in, at all at the beginning, or do you wait until they've gone through their NA test so that they keep that excitement around the bumpers and that they've had no correlation of birds at the water?
Yeah, we try not ever put birds in the water for the puppies.
Okay.
Unless we absolutely have to. Like, I would rather use cheese balls that float, especially if you have a dog that likes food, and cheese balls in particular float.
Yep.
You know, using different things of that nature. But yeah, we try not to do that with the dogs at all.
Yeah. I love that you use the
Arbor.
Cheese balls.
Well, I can tell you, I went through some of the biggest containers of cheese balls with Emma, and it still didn't work.
That's so funny. So
some puppies just don't like bumpers.
Right. You're right. And have you found any kind of secret for them to build that bumper drive in them if they don't like it?
You know, I always start with, we have the little teal Dachshunds that you can buy, or Dachshunds, or however you pronounce
yep.
it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I find that the puppies really like those. And so I will just play, you know, fetch with them with those. And then I'll throw a bumper in here and there, and then take the Dachshund away and just have the bumper. But just make it a game is usually what we try and do with it. and make them have fun with it. Yeah. And I don't let them have any other bumpers but the ones that I play with for their game time. There's nothing else that they have that's similar to that. Because one, I don't want them eating them and chewing them up. And two, I want them, you know, just to use that as something that we'd only use for when we do fetch work, so to speak, or play fetch.
Right. And in the natural ability test, you get that option to use the canvas or the harder plastic ones. Which is there one that you specifically prefer over the other, or do you just go in and grab whatever?
So we have never at any chapter that I've even tested at have ever had the canvas bumpers. We've only had the plastic.
Okay.
And so when I use the chapters at a test, when I use the chapters bumpers, I always try and use the white ones so that the dogs, because the dogs can see white. Because sometimes you'll see orange ones, or not too often as they're solid black, but there's white and black usually. But yeah. I try and always grab the white ones.
Right. So how long, so Emma is 8. Did you take her through the NAVJA system, or did your husband, did you guys split it up?
Well, so my husband handled her.
Okay.
The first time she was run in NA, my husband was, I think he was in Louisiana working. And so Scott Caldwell handled her for us. And then, and she got a prize 3. And with my husband being gone, and he was upset about the score and all of that. And of course she swam just fine that day. We decided to go to New Hampshire and test her in New Hampshire. And so we went up to New Hampshire and ran her in NA again. And she got a prize 3 again on something totally different than the first test. And
of course,
we were not hoping for a prize 3, obviously. So then we decided that we're going to attempt to try and train her for utility. And we knew nothing about utility.
Sure.
At all. I mean, we're new. And, you know, so we had to rely on a lot of people from our chapter. And we got a lot of help from a lot of different people. And Blake ran her, and she was in full-blown heat. And her first utility test, she received a 202.
Wow.
And it was really awesome. And
that's
we,
incredible.
Blake and I had it down that we could run a whole entire utility test in 2.5 hours, just the two of us. And we trained our rears off for that. But, and then when it came to invitational training time, we ended up both training her. Blake was gone quite a bit during that time traveling, and I would take her to invitational training days and I would handle her. And I knew the task. I knew what I had to do, and I knew the dog. And so we switched off and on with that. And then Blake handled her at the test. So,
okay. So what was her age when you ran her in the utility test? Do you remember?
I think she was just turned maybe 3.
Okay. So you did go right basically from that NA test in the following year, you ran utility.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Wow.
We had a huge learning curve.
Yeah, you did. And I mean, for you as novices to it, and, you know, just that younger dog, that's really
impressive. Yeah. And I think, I remember watching people run, you know, train for utility and run their dogs and thinking, there is no way on God's green earth we can make Emma do that, you know, and especially with her water issues. And her water issues came out not so much in duck search, and I don't know why, but it was at the Save by Blind Retrieve a Duck, where she would see the duck fall and be like, I don't really care if I get that duck. And so it was interesting to try and train through, but every dog is different. Mm-hmm. And she was definitely different in that respect.
How did you make that transition with her? Like, when did you notice that that changed, or how did you bring out the, I don't know, like the other strong points to get her to want to go into the water?
Well, I think that we had to revisit force fetch.
Okay.
And us being new to the process, I think, you know, she's our first dog, so we messed her up pretty good. And we didn't really know what we were doing. And so we had to go back and put her back on the table. And we went through that process with ear pinch. And I did the majority of it. And then Blake, when he was available, he did also. But we made some, you know, some changes to that process to try and make it better for her and for us. And we didn't use the collar when we did ear pinch. And so we had to go back and revisit essentially just the pressure on, pressure off with the collar.
Right.
And that made a huge difference for us.
Right. Because if you didn't have that collar, you'd have a hard time reinforcing that command if she refused it at, when she's at a distance. That makes sense.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even when she didn't want to go in the water and retrieve the duck.
Right. Right.
So, and I don't know if it was because she got cold one time or if she was just being obstinate. Cause I mean, I'll be honest with you. Our dogs are spoiled rotten. I mean, they're all, you know, they have their own chairs in the house and they're spoiled, but we wouldn't have it any other way. But when we want them to go out and work for us, we expect them to go and do their job. So it's kind of a give and take that we have. Or, I mean, we're not the only people that do that with their dogs, but mm-hmm. We just want to be able to have good hunting dogs. And we knew that we had to change some things with her. And we learned so much from her, with her being our first NAVDA dog and us training her. It was really good for both my husband and I, and we're very proud of what we're able to accomplish, and we're still learning. And I think that everyone probably is still learning, and every dog's different. So for instance, with Arbor loves the water, but for some reason she is very slow coming back out of the water with anything that she's retrieving, specifically a duck. And it drives my husband crazy. And even with a bumper, when we do drive the pile work with her, she's just slow coming back to him. And I think it's because she's worried she's going to drop it or she doesn't want to give it back to him. You know, mm-hmm. It's funny how dogs are that way. And then Porter, he'll run you over bringing you something back. You know, yeah. So it's funny how it's all the same breed and all three of them are completely opposite.
Right. They're in. Yeah. Especially on that retrieve portion. I think that's where you learn more as a trainer, having all those different types of dogs and knowing that they don't all do it the same. I mean, we have one that would run circles around everybody standing there before she would want to bring it to hand. You know, mm-hmm. Like you see all things happening on retrieves. I've seen dogs bury their birds on the way back, pee on the birds, eat the birds.
Yeah. I've only seen one dog, and it wasn't a short hair, bury game.
Mm.
And that was while we were training. And
I would suppose that's a possessive thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I was really surprised to see it, and it kind of blew me away, you know? So, yeah.
When they start digging and you go, what the hell are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
What's taking so long?
Right, right.
Yes.
So at the Invitational, did you say your husband ran her there?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, my husband, Blake, ran her. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And my husband was braced with Paul Conan.
Oh,
and
nice.
We We had met Angie before, and she had come down to judge for Carolina's chapter, maybe the fall prior to the Invitational, or maybe that spring. I can't remember. And so I met her, and we connected immediately. Angie's an amazing person with everything that she does.
She sure is.
Not only for NAFTA, but just she's just an amazing person.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And mm-hmm. So we had the opportunity to meet Paul, and he ran
Who
Brandy,
is also amazing.
And, yes, he is.
Yeah.
They're both amazing.
Uh-huh.
So Emma and their girl Brandy were bracemates, and it went well in the field. I mean, you can't see that much during the Invitational, at least not in Ohio. And we got to know Angie and Paul more, you know, from that. And shortly after the Invitational, I think Angie came down to judge maybe for Tar Heel chapter. I can't remember. And I think that's when I may have just called her and said, Angie, I want a puppy out of Brandy. And she said, what? And I said, yep, I want a puppy out of Brandy. And so I waited for my porter for 2 years, and I have him, and I couldn't be happier.
That's awesome. And how old is he now?
He turned 2 in April.
Okay. What are you doing with him? So he's already gone through the natural ability test. Have you ran utility yet?
Yes, I have. I ran it in October.
Nice.
And he received a prize one, and I'm training him currently for the Invitational.
Holy cow. So he's, wow, you really learn quickly, don't you?
Well, sometimes the hard way. But I just was really lucky. And I tell Angie and Paul all the time that I was really lucky to be able to get a dog from them. And he's just an amazing guy. And I call him my little guy all the time. And, he's just amazing to me, and he picks things up very quickly. He loves to work for you, and he's just, I couldn't be happier. And I know, unfortunately, know all too well about failing the Invitational, and I failed in 2007 or 2019, and I ran a Drothar. His name is Cyrus, and he's an amazing dog also that I fell in love with very quickly. And we did not pass because of the field, which going into the test, that would have been the last thing that I thought we would fail.
Hmm.
So sometimes they surprise you.
Yeah, they do.
So,
yep. So he was one that you trained for somebody else then?
Yes. So his owner is a good friend of ours, and he actually introduced us to Drothars, as he owned one at the time, and then he bought a puppy, and the puppy is Cyrus, the one that I ended up training. So he went to a good friend of ours who trains Drothars, who happened to live right down the road from us. And Blake and I started doing work with Matthew and learning from Matt, and Matt and I were talking, and he was force fetching Cy, and he was going to run him in VJP. And so I said, you know, Blake and I decided that we wanted to go watch him run. And at the same time that Cyrus came to Matt's kennel, another dog came to Matt's kennel out of the same litter, and his name is Kane. Hmm. And Blake ended up running Kane all through the German system and the NAFTA system, and Kane is a versatile champion.
Nice.
That's so awesome. It was kind of crazy, both of us running two litter mates, both males, mm-hmm. at the same time. So, and it was the same day we ran.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting.
So what is your opinion on the differences between the Drots then, since you've spent time with them and trained them and tested them, mm-hmm. to the short hairs? Do you have preferences?
Well, if I didn't own short hairs, I would own a Drothar.
Okay. And for what reason?
I really like Drothars. I believe that they are just phenomenal dogs, as well as short hairs. I really like the grittiness of them. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I mean they have a lot of drive. And they are just, like, they don't care if the water's cold. They're right. going to be in the water, you know? They don't care if it's pouring down rain outside. They're going to go do, you know, whatever. I mean, they just have that about them. Mm-hmm. And, or at least the ones that I've been around. But I like that about the dogs. And I'll be honest with you, I ran an 85-pound male Drothar that was the biggest baby I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, and he would get up in my lap, and he, I mean, he was just, they're just big babies is all they are. And all of them are, you know.
Especially the boys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But I learned so much from Cyrus. I mean, I ran him, I did not run him in his BJP, but I ran him in NA and NAVDA. And I actually, I ran him in NA, and the next day I ran him in utility, which I will never do again. But I did that at 10 months old.
Okay.
And if he would have just stayed steady on one bird, I would have prized him in utility that day.
Wow. Yeah, that's young.
He got fours in everything else in the test. So obviously not cooperation and obedience, but or the field portion aspect of that. But then, you know, 6 months later, I reran him in utility and received a prize one. Mm-hmm. But he taught me a lot. And when we failed in 2019 at the Invitational, it was horrible. And I don't want to relive that again. So I keep thinking about all the lessons that Cyrus taught me, and that I need to make sure that I'm doing the right thing for Porter, because I don't want to do that again.
Yeah. What do you mean when you say by that? Like, what was your biggest takeaway with that dog that you learned?
I think that I should have started doing more brace work with him earlier on.
Okay.
And I started doing brace work with him probably in April of that year. And he was not a natural backer. And so it took a while to train him to back, which Blake and I had never experienced a dog that was not a natural backer, because our Emma was. And so I think it's a lot easier to train a natural backing dog, because it's just a normal instinct, instead of trying to make them understand that they have to stop to back. And so I think that that's definitely something that I would have started training for a lot earlier, which I did with Porter. I think the other thing is just the more experience that the dogs have being out and hunting, I think it helps a lot. Forsyth, his owner was deployed a lot, and that's why I ended up handling him in test. And I took him out west after the Invitational. I never was able to take him when we were, when we went, you know, prior to the Invitational. And I think that they can learn bad habits as young dogs out west. And I just think it's just the experience of it that the dogs have to experience, of being out in these huge, wide open spaces, and there's birds and critters and all this stuff that they can get into, and some of it's good and some of it's bad.
Sure.
And they have to learn from that, you know?
Right.
And Cy didn't have that. And I think that it does help dogs, young dogs, to be out there and experience hunting, and then obviously experience being run in fields with, I don't know, 8-10 dogs out there too.
Mm-hmm. So, and you know, it's interesting you say that, because, you know, the mannerisms on what we expect dogs to have for training and testing is different from the manners that they will have on wild birds or I should say, I mean,
absolutely.
And we personally prefer that, right? Because if the dog, if you're out pheasant hunting and the dog stops and points on its first scent, that rooster could be long ways away.
Absolutely. It'll be a mile away.
Right.
Yeah. And I also, like, I don't enforce setting this to shot when I hunt, because sometimes you could wound a pheasant and it falls down, but it's going to run. And I would like to, for my dog to be able to retrieve that game for me instead of losing it or, you know, going somewhere and dying and not finding the game. So, yeah, I mean, they do learn some things that aren't so good, but the whole part of the whole study to flush and shot is nice, or not shot, but to not, sorry, study to shot, but not to fall, is it's more beneficial for your dog, in my mind, when you have other people out there so that your dog does not get shot.
Right. Exactly.
And a lot of people don't understand that when we train steadiness, how important it is, because we go out west with probably, I don't know, there's probably about 14 of us that go every year for the most part. And we all have two or three dogs apiece. And so it's short hairs and Drawthars, and that's what we hunt out there. And we all have a good understanding of our dogs, but some dogs are going to be more loose than others, and our expectations, some of ours are a little different, but for the most part, you know, we are not going to shoot each other's dogs, but if we have them at least steady to the shot, then it's more safe.
Right. And even from a guiding perspective, because you do some guiding as well, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, my husband usually, we guide together, and he usually does a safety brief. And every time we take people out on guided hunts, Blake talks about the dogs. And he always brings up the fact that our dogs are supposed to stop and they are supposed to stay there. However, they're still animals, and sometimes they'll break. So please, you know, be careful of that. And for the most part, our dogs do quite well. But if for some reason one of them was to break and someone shot our dog, I don't know. That would not work out very well for either of us. And I always tell them too during the safety brief, like, that bird is not worth my dog's life.
Right.
Like, we can get you more birds, but we can't get another dog.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that works pretty well, or do you guys, have you been in any situations where you need to give them a reminder of, like, that was too close?
You know, I personally have never had a situation. I know that my husband has had a couple situations, and he was guiding with a friend of his that was from our NAVDA chapter, and he got shot. And so that didn't go so well.
The person did, or the dog did? The person did. Oh my gosh.
Not the dog, the person. So yeah, it was, that was a bit of a mess. But luckily, knock on wood, I've never had that happen. In fact, a lot of the people that we guide for are the same people. And there's these two brothers and their son that they love dogs. And for one brother's like, I don't even think I'm going to shoot this, you know, timeout. I'm just going to watch the dogs. Maybe I'll take some pictures for y'all. I mean, they just love watching the dogs. And I think that is so cool, because not a lot of people do that on guided hunts. They just want to kill birds, right?
Right.
But finding those people that just want to watch the dogs is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agree. I think that's why you and I probably do it and started it was for the dogs.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. I mean, all this stuff we do is for our dogs. And
right.
You know, it really is. Or at least it is for my husband. I think a lot of people too, but there's so much we do and it's just for the dogs, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, we have a pen full of ducks that we've had for over a year. And we ended up not needing as many ducks for training for utility. And sometimes they would actually come up out of the swamp if we hadn't recovered them and gone to the pen, like they were homing because they knew where the food was, which is crazy.
You're homing ducks.
So, yeah, we have homing ducks. And so we ended up having all of these babies hatch this year, which is phenomenal. And
adorable.
I love animals. And baby ducks are so cute.
Yes.
But I can tell you, my husband and I have no clue on what to do with these baby ducks. So we're reading all this stuff, and I'm like, Blake, we got to get them different food. Then I go and I get them these mealworms because they say that they like these mealworms. Mm-hmm. So I had been giving them for, I don't know, probably a couple weeks, and we just bought a new bag, and I threw some out there. And I don't know what happened to this baby, but it had a mealworm in its mouth, and all of a sudden it just like started like choking on it.
Oh my.
And Blake and I both run into the duck pen, and Blake's giving the duck CPR and sticking his, you know, hand down the duck's mouth, pulling the worm out. I mean, this is the stuff we do for our dogs.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, and obviously other animals, but
right.
I mean, this is what we do, you know, and it's like, yeah. We go to the feed store, I think about every week and a half, and we have pigeons. So we got our pigeon food, and then we got our baby pigeon food, and then we have the supplements we put in our water, and, you know, and then the ducks and the quail and the chucker. And so we have a farm for our dogs.
Yeah. That's awesome. You guys, I kind of like, I have this image in my mind of giving a duck CPR right now, a baby duck at that.
Yeah.
Did it work?
It did.
Oh,
but
well, bless his heart.
We ended up losing. We lost probably, I don't know, probably now we've lost 10 or more babies.
Okay.
And it just sucks, you know, because literally one day I was out here and I was helping a friend and we were training and I just looked at the ducks because I liked a lot to watch them. Mm-hmm. And everything was fine. And I went back like an hour and a half later. And there's a dead baby in the pen.
Hmm.
I'm like, how does this happen? They were just fine, you know? So just like the pigeons, sometimes the babies die and we don't know why. And,
right.
You know, so
yeah,
I know it's all animals and part of it, but
it's still tough.
We do all this for our dogs, you know?
Exactly. Well, and yeah, whether the duck dies choking on a mealyworm or his ultimate death of being a training
right.
duck.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, and I tell Blake all the time, like I talk to him all the time and I talk to the chucker and I always tell him, I'm like, oh, great guys. Like you need to make my baby a VC. Okay. And that's what I tell him. Blake's like, you're nuts. And I'm like,
that's
I know.
Adorable.
That's just what I do. So yeah.
I love how deep you guys have gotten into this though. You know, like, and had Blake tested, because he had the short hair before, and so had
no,
he tested?
No, we never.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
So why
no.
did
so,
you start testing? Did Emma's breeder require it?
Well, he didn't require it, and he just suggested it.
Okay.
And so then we started thinking, we were like, we don't want to do this. And I'll be honest with you, the only reason why we have Emma is because we saw a man in Charlotte at Bass Pro Shops with a solid liver male, and we absolutely fell in love with the dog. Well, about a year and a half later, that same man showed up at a NAPTA test with his solid liver male, and his name is Leon Harry, who's a NAPTA judge.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of funny how everything worked out in the whole process of us, you know, seeing Leon's dog and then deciding we have to have a solid liver short hair and then the whole process of us being involved in that though.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you even are breeders now because you bred Emma. Has she had one litter or two?
Yeah, but she's had one litter.
Okay.
And that's all she will have. I can tell you, we have a kennel, but we are not breeders.
Okay.
And it is something that I have found that is definitely not for Stacy Horst.
Okay. Why is that?
Well, we had a bad experience and it was our first litter and we lost a puppy.
Okay.
And it'll still bring tears to my eyes. And you go through so much, like preparing for this and making sure that, you know, your dog is physically fit. You make sure that she's on all the right, you know, supplements and all of this stuff that you do. Mm-hmm. And she only ended up having two puppies and one didn't make it. Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty rough. And it's not for Stacy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's nothing about breeding that's easy. It's very, very tough.
Yeah.
There's a lot of terrible things that happen.
And I understand as animals and all, you know, but I did not care for it. And I told Blake, I said, we're not ever going to do this again. Mm-hmm. And he said, that's not right. We are. And I said, well, here's the deal. I said, I'm going on vacation. I said, so when that happens, I'm going to go on vacation, which will never happen because I would be too nervous not to be there in case something would happen or, you know. Yeah.
Right. So you're not going to breed her again?
No, we were trying to get her fixed actually this month, but things just got crazy and schedules changed around. And so we're hoping to go ahead and have her fixed next month because she turned 8 in May. And
sure,
we just, you know,
yeah,
we don't want to press our luck. And, mm-hmm. you know, they stay after 8 years old. It's, you know, could be bad for the dog. And so we decided that we won't breed her again.
Sure. So you kept the puppy, though, from her.
That's correct.
Yeah. Tell me about that puppy.
So her name is Arbor. She is, well, she ran her, my husband has the greatest luck. She ran her NA test in full-blown heat. at Pocono Mountain Chapter in July of 19.
Okay.
And then Blake ran her in utility, I believe, and it was October of 19 when I ran Porter in NA. And she did well. She got a prize too. She did not get a foreign duck search.
Okay.
And Blake was pretty bummed out. And so the test was at the beginning of October. I think we left a couple weeks after that and we went to South Dakota and hunted. And then we, on the way out there, Blake was milling around in his mind of testing her again and called some other people that didn't do so well at the test and called some other people and got a test lined up. And they ran a quick test in November and she got a prize too again because of duck search.
Hmm. Okay.
And that was not the thing that Blake was concerned about because when we were training, she was fine with it.
Sure.
So I don't know what happened. So Blake decided, well, I'm not testing her. Cause in November when he tested her, the water was pretty damn cold. And she went out and she got the duck in, I don't know, probably like 5 or 6 minutes. And she just didn't want to go out. And it was cold on the reason. She said, no, nope, Dad, sorry, I got the duck for you.
Oh,
and
sure.
So
that's tough.
We waited until October of last year to retest her. And Blake handled her. And she received a 204 prize one.
Wow. Well, congrats.
You
guys have a pretty high standard there in your household for your dogs.
Well, so I think part of it is we both have type A personalities, right?
Okay.
So when you set out to do something, you know, we try and make sure we do it right or we're successful. And some people may say that we overtrain, but we try and I don't believe we overtrain. We just want success.
Mm-hmm. Well, overtraining, you'd start seeing issues with, you know, you dogs that would be, you know, the refusing stuff. So the fact that mm-hmm. you're doing prize ones, that's not happening. So
yeah,
you just enjoy.
Well, an Arbor is quite young. She will turn 3 in July.
Okay.
So, it seems like we're back at it again. You know, in 19, we had the 2 draughts and they were not even 2.5 when they went to the Invitational. And so we got young dogs again, that we're training 2 years later for the Invitational. But they both, you know, they're doing good, mm-hmm. I think. And, yeah, I mean, you see differences in older dogs versus younger dogs, but sometimes younger is better when it comes to not knowing or having learned a lot of bad habits leading up to that. So hopefully,
oh, for sure,
be on our side.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yep. Are you going to be in Iowa then?
Yes, we will.
Mm-hmm. Great. Which day are you running?
So I run Porter on Monday.
Okay.
And Blake runs the Arbor on Tuesday.
Nice. Well, that's exciting.
So I know that you have dogs going to the Invitational, correct?
Yeah, we have one we're bringing ourselves, and then we have, oh, I think this is bad, 1 or 2 that we've bred that will be there in addition to this one. So,
well, that's awesome.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
And what day is yours running?
Our personal dog is running on Sunday. So first day. I don't know how we got lucky to draw that, but we did.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. So, but yeah, we put in a volunteer for Monday. But that's like 2 months ago and I haven't heard anything back. So I should probably check in with her. But
yeah, I'm sure that Annie's probably a little overwhelmed with all of this stuff right now.
So, I'm
with
sure.
it being so big. And
yeah.
Blake and I decided that it's going to take us 2.5 days to get there. Mm. And we're going to pull our camper, which is another thing that we bought for the dogs because we did have a fifth wheel. Mm-hmm. And we decided to get rid of that because we couldn't have the topper on the truck. So we sold it and now we got a pull behind.
Nice.
38-foot toy hauler. So, and it's all for the dogs, you know.
For the 3 dogs?
Yep, for the 3 dogs. Because with a fifth wheel, and it was a toy hauler, it's just nice because the back is just a garage. So we have all their kennels set up there. Everything for them, you know, if they want to go and lay on the bed, they can lay on the bed. They can lay on the couch, whatever. We don't care.
Those things are awesome. Those toy haulers, they are slick.
Yeah. And if we decide we want to pull, you know, or bring like a UTV or something, we can do that also.
Yeah. Pull it right in there.
So, yeah. Yeah.
That's nice. And then, for Invitational training, are you guys using that quite a bit then to drive around and find new bodies of water? And
absolutely. So
nice.
Our dogs have, I mean, poor Porter. I picked him up from Angie and Paul in May, end of May of 19, and was training for the Invitational. He went everywhere, which is great for him. And he has been in the camper a ton, and Arbor and Emma. So they're pretty used to it. But we're going to probably take the camper out and go this place, you know, probably about 3 hours from here. And it's a retriever place and they just have tons of different blinds set up in all different locations. And you can go out and do water work. I think you have to pay like a certain, like $20-$25 a day or something to do that. And we'll just take the camper out there and just run blinds and they have some fields and we could just do a utility run with the dogs and let them have fun. And,
perfect.
You know, it's always good to do that. And we take our dogs with us a lot of places, all over the place. Mm-hmm. And especially with us pulling it to the Invitational, we want them used to that.
Yeah.
And so that it's not something new for them because that could change a lot.
For sure.
Yeah. For your dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to go to Iowa and we're going to have 1 day of nothing, just to kind of settle in and then do the ground walkthrough on Saturday, and then Sunday test starts. So
nice. Cool.
And we'll volunteer.
Have to find
every
you there.
Day afterwards.
Oh, you guys are going to stay the whole week?
Yes.
Good for you guys. That's awesome.
Well, I mean, we've done it in the past. Mm-hmm. Blake will run or I'll run, and then we volunteer. Mm-hmm. Because we wouldn't have been able to run our dogs if someone hadn't volunteered, you know, if it wasn't for the judges, you know, volunteering to judge, or if it wasn't for the bird planners putting the birds out, or someone running the zinger winger or distraction gunning at, you know, double mark, or, you know, dragging the ducks, which I spent a whole day dragging ducks in Ohio, and I was by myself and it was pretty boring, but someone has to do it.
Yes. Yeah. I wish I had that much time to be able to get away, because it is, and just being around that group of people, it's a good time, and seeing the amazing dogs from all around the country. I'm super jealous that you get to do that all week. Super jealous.
Well, and I think it's just, I mean, the whole process is amazing if you really think about it. And I don't think that, I mean, I think about it more now, knowing and it's probably because of my, because I failed with Thai, but just the amount of time and effort that you put into it, and you don't go there to fail, you go there to pass. And sometimes it doesn't work that way, but just that morning that you run your dog with those opening ceremonies, like, you can stand there and, you know, your husband's up there at the line and you're watching everything, and you, and it's emotional. But when it's you standing there, it's a total different ball game.
For sure. Yeah. What's the dynamic like with you and your husband when you guys train alongside each other, like you are, you know, especially for, like, you know, the Olympics of the dog sports, when there's so much pressure?
I'll be honest with you. I mean, sometimes it's difficult, and I know sometimes he wants to wring my neck, and I know I want to wring his neck sometimes, but ultimately, you know, we are a team. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
And we may, you know, get into it over something, be like, no, I think it needs to be this way, or no, this, you know, but for the most part, we train the same. We have the same methodologies or techniques, or however you want to say it. And it's nice when, for instance, we had an individual come to us on Monday, and he needed help with some backing work. And so I wasn't able to be here right when they started, and I drove up, and my husband was running a dog, trying to help someone else train their dog, and he was gunning and operating launchers all at the same time. And he said to me, can you please get your gun? Because we're going out to the field right now. And I'm like, yep, sure, no problem. And I just jump in, and I already know the drill. I know how we do it. I'm shooting birds. I'm doing, you know, whatever he asked me to do, and it works, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think because we do the same, I don't know, maybe just because we trained together for so long, you know, we just know what the other one expects from us, so to speak, in those circumstances.
And do you find that you guys complement each other in respects, you know, where he might see something you're doing, and, or you'll see something that he's doing, or each other's dogs are doing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you can't always see some things as a handler, right? And right now, specifically with invitational training, when I line my dog up for that blind to go across the water, I'm standing even with my dog. Like, I may try and, like, look behind him a little bit to make sure he's lined up. But when someone's standing behind the dog, they can see if that dog is lined up appropriately to be able to be sent in the direction you're sending that dog. And sometimes you need a little bit of that guidance or that help. And in fact, we had an invitational training day last Saturday with a group of all of us from North Carolina that are going. And another woman and I were talking about it, and she was like, well, Stacey, I set them up wrong. And I happened to, when she sent her dog, I was next, and I walked, I don't know, probably a half mile back around to, because I was helping put the ducks out and stuff. And so I kind of missed what happened when she sent her dog, and she told me I screwed up and I didn't set him right. And he was canted to the other side, but thank God Gretchen took a picture, because then I could see where I sent him, and I sent him totally on the wrong direction. And she was like, how is it that you're able to figure this out? And I'm like, I'll be honest with you. You know, it doesn't just come natural to you. And the way that I had to figure it out was, when I walk up there, I kind of put my forearm up and down the dog's body, you know, and kind of think, okay, where is he at? And then look at his tail and look at his head and make sure that's lined up with my arm when I go to send him in that direction. And if it's not, then I'll heel him away or kind of click him over to the side and move him. And then look at it again, because that's pretty important that, you know, we get our dogs lined up for the blind. Mm-hmm. So having, you know, my husband or other people that I train with there, and then all of us trying to work that out together. And it's pretty cool that Gretchen was able to get it on camera for Stephanie to see that, oh, that's how I lined him up. And that's why he went, you know, way far left. But thank goodness she was using a duck and he recorrected himself. So he was still successful.
Right. Right.
Are you guys training a lot of other people's dogs?
So we do.
Okay.
We don't board dogs. We don't have the capability of really boarding them. So we'll take one here and there that stay with us. But other than that, we prefer, specifically with things like force fetch, for the handlers to, or owners to, complete the process themselves. So Blake and I have both learned and seen the importance of owners force fetching their own dog. Mm-hmm. And the bond that creates with the owner and the dog will not be, there's just nothing like it. Even if Blake or I was to force fetch a dog for someone, it's still not the same for your dog and you.
Right.
I think that it's just so much better, and it is a long process. And the way that Blake and I teach or train force fetch is we do all the table work. We use toe hitch. Then we move to the ground, and then we introduce bumpers, and we move back to the ground, and we do drive the pile, and then we go back on the table and introduce game. Mm-hmm. And so it's a long process.
Right.
And some people don't have time for it. But what we'll do is we'll take a dog and their owner, and we'll give them homework from the beginning to the end. They come once a week and they get homework, and then they come back a week later, whether it's me or Blake, evaluate the dog, maybe kind of push it a little bit if it needs pushed, or maybe put it on the ground from the table, you know, just depends on the dog, obviously, and then go from there.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of my good friends and one of our clients, she was able to introduce game last week. And yesterday we did all but two subjects of HCP, and it went phenomenal.
Perfect.
So, I mean, it's wonderful to be able to see handlers learning the process and doing the process themselves, because it's more beneficial to them and their dog to do it that way than it is for me to do it. And
yeah,
I always say it's not just about, okay, yeah, I can get paid more if I have your dog every day and force fetch your dog twice a day and it stays at my house, but you as the owner are not going to get anything out of it like you would if you did it yourself.
Mm-hmm. And what do you feel that you're helping connect the most there? That a lot of these owners, if they were to try this on their own at home, that they would struggle with, that you are able to help them through?
I can tell you it's a daunting task.
Yeah.
And it's part of a large portion of the foundation of the dog. and you can screw it up really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that's why a lot of people don't want to do it. And, you know, it is time consuming. But I think that there's a few things with it. Either too little pressure or too much pressure. And I'll just use the toe hitch, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could use too less or too little just with a hitch. And when you transfer to the collar, that could also be too little or too much. And that could be a really bad thing. And most people oftentimes introduce their dog to the collar during the force fetch process with pressure on, pressure off.
Right.
And that could be very detrimental to the dog if too much pressure is used on that collar. Also, there's a lot of coordination involved in this. And I'll tell you, sometimes, well, Blake will laugh at me because I'm trying to hold a toe hitch in one hand and a controller and a dowel or a buck or whatever. You know, if I had three or four hands, would I, you know, was force fetching a dog, it would be much easier.
I'm the same way.
And there is that coordination aspect of it. And I'll be honest with you. And then, so you go to one side of the table and then you switch to the other side and then you're like, oh no.
Now you switch it all to the other hand. Yeah.
Right. And then I'm like, well, maybe it's just easier if I put two toe hitches on the dog and then I don't have to think about it that much, you know? And
I know. I tell my husband, I'm like, here, you hold this, you hold the clicker. And when the, you know, when it needs to be clicked, hit that. So I don't have to worry about that portion of this.
Right.
Same thing. Yeah. There's just too much going on. I don't know. And I feel like I'm a good multitasker in general, but you put all that stuff in my hands while I'm dog training and I just can't figure it out.
Well, and sometimes it's just a lot, you know, and I think also it's obviously a lot of mental for the dog, but it's also for you as the owner or the trainer, because you're trying to figure the dog out and I'm constantly watching the dog's tail. Mm-hmm. If I see that tail even start to not, you know, be happy, so to speak, mm-hmm. then that's time to quit or time to change things. I know that it's not supposed to be a happy time, so to speak, but it shouldn't be a really crappy time either. And, I always watch the dogs and I don't want them to shut down on me. And I don't ever want to give a dog too much pressure on that table during that process.
Yeah. And don't you feel that a lot of owners just in general struggle with the ability to read their dog? You know, if you give them a task of, okay, this is what needs to happen in this step, that they can't necessarily, and it's not with bad intention, they just can't necessarily identify that dog, how that dog is reacting and with the pressure to put on more or to apply less.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah.
And then there'll be dogs that you can use like a one low and they're going to cry. And you know, so in a one low for, I don't know, I have actually felt it on the collar before and I know what little that is. And especially after they've had, you know, more pressure than that, even a too low. And, you know, it's just, it's part of the process though. I think with those dogs, like they just don't want any pressure at all. And there's a lot of dogs like that. They just don't want any pressure at all. And they will, if they are able to yelp and get away with it in a different situation. And then when you're trying to force fetch them, and they're doing that, they're most likely doing it because they got away with it prior to that.
Right. Could you ever see yourself being a full-time trainer, or is that something that you are currently kind of working towards doing, that you already have it in sight?
Well, my husband and I, we don't want to stay in North Carolina and for the rest of our lives. And our family is out west and they're getting older and we know that we need to probably be a little closer. We'd also like to have a closer drive, you know, to go out west to hunt, which is selfish too. But currently we don't have the property to be able to have dogs full time. And we've been looking at different property. Obviously right now is not the time to build because of the wood prices.
Right.
So we're working on that process. We would really like to be able to do that. We look all the time at different property, and trying to find property that would fit best for us because, you know, we are going to want, obviously, a pond. We want to be able to have, you know, some access to some blind retrieves. We want a swamp, you know, we kind of want it all. So trying to find that right piece of property may not happen per se, but at least having a little bit of it would be nice.
Something that you had, that we had talked about previously was the fact that you really embrace the opportunity to help other women train their dogs. And, you know, why is that? Why is that so important to you?
Well, I think it's important just being a woman. And I also have been told recently, and yesterday we had three women out here running three different aspects of testing, and it was just awesome to see. And I think that sometimes women become discouraged with training dogs. Some women's husbands don't necessarily care for it. And they need someone to help to support them, or maybe they just need a little encouragement to get them to go. And, you know, for instance, I have a 20 gauge that I usually have with me all the time. And I've had women say, well, Stacy, I can't shoot at, say by blind retrieve a duck. And I was like, what do you mean? I need someone to shoot for me. I said, well, why don't you just shoot the, you know, the 12 gauge, the chapter gun? Well, no, I'm worried. And I was like, well, do you want to try my 20? And typically that helps. I mean, I know a couple women now that have gone out and got their own guns, you know, but I think that little bit of encouragement there and saying, okay, well, why don't you just shoot my gun and see how it feels? And obviously it's not going to fit them, but they can, you know, I think they felt more comfortable with a 20 gauge versus a 12 gauge.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes that's the case. I think that trying to go into this world with your own bird dog can be very humbling and daunting. And not knowing, like I did, like we all did at one point in time, can be very daunting. And for women, and a lot of chapters, it's a lot of men. We have a lot of females in our chapter, which is wonderful. But I think that maybe we just all need to encourage each other a little bit more and say, hey, you know, we can help with this, or we've done this before. You want me to go out in the field and walk with you, or, you know, just encouraging women. And we have a member of our chapter, and she didn't get the score that she wanted in October. And I've been giving her crap since October when she was going to put her dog into another utility test. And when she did, I was very happy because I think that we all need that encouragement from one another, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
And I just think, like, yesterday was amazing to see. We had a woman running, or she was training for duck search, and another for utility, or utility, not the utility test. And then we had Suzanne out here, and we were doing BDD DNA HDP test. And then we had another dog out here, and she's in between NA and utility, or UPT.
Mm-hmm.
And so just being the fact that we, you know, we all do this, and they say, they've told me, or a couple of women that I train with and train their dogs for, they say, we really wanted to come to you because you're a woman. And we can ask stupid questions and not get looked down upon.
Right.
And I guess I never thought about it that way. But And to me, there's nothing stupid.
Sure.
But yeah.
And I don't necessarily know that it's, you know, looked down upon. I think sometimes just in general, women are intimidated.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, that they've maybe brought on their own, and that they just, you know, they feel like if they ask a question, especially about something like a gun or dog training stuff, that it's just an intimidation factor in general of, right, am I going to be stupid if I ask this question? And
right.
I don't know. I ask stupid questions all the time.
I do too, but I don't care.
I don't care.
But I think though that when it comes to the personal aspect of it, when you have your own dog, mm-hmm, and you're wanting to do this, that it's easier to go and ask another woman a question, whether it's regarding the test or regarding training or something along those lines, than to ask another male, whether, you know, it's in the chapter or whatever. I think that it's probably just easier.
Relatable. And, there's a lot of relatability there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and the whole thing is, like, I'll be honest with you, I hate touching birds all the time with my bare hands. I really do. And I do it all the time. But part of the problem that I don't like is that I'm in the field a lot. And even when we go out west and hunt, it's cold. I got gloves on. It doesn't really matter. But mm-hmm, I don't like to have bird poop and blood and guts all over me all day long. And that's all I smell. And sometimes we're out there all day long, right? I can take my gloves off and get rid of that at least a little bit and use hand sanitizer, you know, before I can get somewhere to wash my hands. Mm-hmm. And so I have encouraged a lot of women, well, if you don't want to touch a game, just wear a glove, you know?
Yeah.
And with doing work with BDD GNA, there's so many different types of game that you have to handle, especially when you get up to the higher levels of VGP. And so I literally would have a pair of gloves for birds, like for chucker or quail, and then I have a pair of gloves for rabbit and a pair of gloves for duck and a pair of gloves for raccoon.
Right. Yeah.
Because I didn't want to have the wrong scent of the animal on my hand when, you know, I had to keep it all separate for myself.
Right. No. And I think it is, that's a super common concern though. It really is. And I know even men that feel that same way. And I feel bad because I'm a man and therefore I should do this because they feel the same way. It's like a, you know, almost just a curve of experience or comfortability that a lot of us need to just work over or have worked over or may never, but you do what it takes to get you to feel comfortable, and wearing the gloves is super common. And actually I think hygienically it's recommended, but
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you'll see me, you know, in pictures with my gloves on with my dog in tests because I'm just so used to doing it.
Sure.
I still do it. And, we're out in the middle of nowhere and I can't wash my hands the whole time. And, so I've adopted that. But there are times when I forget my gloves and I don't care, you know?
Yeah.
But if it makes people more comfortable to wear them, then more power to you, because I do it too, you know?
Yeah.
But I just think that for women, it can be a little daunting. I know that I've done some pretty wild things, like running a 10-month-old draw, you know, in utility and things like that. But I guess I never thought about it when I was doing it. I just did it. And I told myself, this is what I'm going to do. And this is just it, you know? And not everyone is that way. But I think that with the more and more we talk to, you know, a lot more women with their bird dogs, and even guys too, it's just like, well, when you make that decision to enter your dog in that test, then let's do this, you know, let's all work together. Let's do this and let's do it right, you know? And that's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Would you say in your chapter, the majority of your members, or maybe even just your active members that are there at training days, are the majority of them women?
No.
Okay.
The majority of our membership is definitely male.
Okay.
But we probably have a good probably 15 women in our chapter that run dogs. You know, and that come out and volunteer, and we just had our first ladies shoot for our fundraiser, because we do a little skeet shoot for the fundraiser, and we had our first team, and I think that we had like 12 women shooters.
Awesome.
So that was pretty awesome, you know. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, I mean, we have a lot of women that are handling dogs in our chapter, and then we have a lot of wives. And a lot of times the wives end up being the ones that now have the dogs, you know, after being at all the NAVDA tests and saying, you know what, I want to do that.
Right.
And I think it's awesome, you know?
Yeah, it is. No, we just had some people that have a puppy from us, well, year old now. They were just over yesterday, and we did a little celebration with them because it was their first bird dog. They have two young kids, but she doesn't hunt. Actually, she's not comfortable with guns and shooting at this point. But he has been busy and worked on the weekends, so he was never able to attend the training days. And he would come during the week to our house for some one-on-ones. But on test day, she ended up running the dog because she had been going to all the training sessions. And she ended up getting a 112 with him, which was just super cool.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. But it was so funny yesterday when she was telling us the details of the test, because she said the worst part of the test was, you know, when they test the puppy for gum sensitivity. She goes, I remember, I knew it was coming. And she goes, I even saw, you know, the judge's hand go up. So I should have known and remembered. She's like, but it just made me jump. And she's like, when they wrote off the scores, they said, the dog was fine, but the handler gets marked for gun sensitivity.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, it was funny.
So that's great.
But that's just like you said, like when they, you know, when sometimes things happen and it might not necessarily be the availability for the owner, and the person that didn't have intentions to get the dog to be their hunting dog, they're the ones that end up kind of doing the legwork for it. And you know, maybe this season she will feel comfortable to go out there, and maybe she won't shoot this season, but if she's out there in the field, because she really enjoyed working her dog, so that might make that conversion to a new hunter. So
absolutely. And you know, so my friend Suzanne, with her first dog, or her first own dog, you know, the one that she handles, mm-hmm. She did not hunt before the dog. She has come so far along in this process of being a dog mom and a bird dog mom that she is booking, or she's already booked a trip to Maine to go grouse hunting.
Yeah.
And I cannot wait to hear all about that trip, because that's going to be so great for her and for her dog. And she's going with her husband and their other dog, and it's just going to be an awesome time for them. And I'm so happy for her and so proud of her, because she is just dove in head first when she got this dog, and it's been amazing to watch.
That is so cool.
Yeah. And I'm biased a little bit about Callie, because her dad is Cyrus, the one that I trained. So so I'm kind of like the auntie, you know,
sure.
But I can watch Callie and be like, that's her dad right there, you know, and it's funny how you can see that. But for me, with training the dogs and watching the handlers have success, one, that's why we do it. And two, just being able to watch that, I mean, it's awesome. And then saying to Suzanne yesterday, all your hard work paid off. All those times that you didn't want to continue doing this, or those times that you're frustrated, And those times where you're like, I'm just going to bring Callie to you and you can do this. You got to see the results of that yesterday.
Yeah, she puts in the time. She puts in the legwork for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she does. And I think, you know, a lot of us do. And I think we can see the results of that. And so, yeah, it's just cool to watch the dogs from, you know, when they're just coming home, you know, with the handlers too. Now they're two, or, you know, now they're four, and they're utility prize one dogs, and they're going to the Invitational, and knowing that dog, you know, from when it was little till now is pretty awesome to watch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I could talk to you all day, Stacey.
I could talk to you too all day, Courtney.
It's so fun. I could just continue to pick your brain. Well, and we will. We'll have to meet up at the Invitational so I can just continue.
Absolutely.
But I wanted to ask you, and maybe you have already answered this for me, of what your bucket list hunt is. Is that going to be Chucker?
Yeah, I really want to go to Oregon, and okay. I really want to Chucker hunt. And the other hunting that I would really like to do is I would like to go elk hunting in New Mexico, which I haven't been able to do yet. But as far as bird hunting, yeah, I think that I've seen so many pictures and videos, and we use Chucker all the time. You know, we buy them all the time for all these tests and for training and stuff, but I want to go out in the wild and hunt them. I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, it's definitely, I think that's a bucket list hunt for a lot of people. And I went for my first time last year, and it was quite the challenge, but definitely something, you know, like I love a good challenge. And so now it's like something I not only want to do, but like, I want to feel like I can conquer it. I don't know if it's possible to do that, but it's right. A pretty good time. I sure like watching the dogs work and figuring out the behavior of those crazy red-legged devils. They're, you know, it's just so much more different from what I've ever known about that bird as a training bird. So
right.
Yeah. 10 years of seeing them as a training bird to then pursuing them in their natural wild state. It's cool. It's very cool.
Well, and I think that from what everyone's told me, they're like, you better be in good shape too.
Yeah.
Because of all the altitude and stuff like that. So,
Yeah.
I mean, I'm ready. Let's go.
Let's go.
So,
yeah. Come out. I mean, come out here. I'll go with you anytime. Absolutely.
Yeah. I just would love to be able to go and, you know, we've used so many Chucker in our training for NAVDA. And, you know, like you said, just being able to go out there, it's not like our dogs don't know what Chucker are, you know?
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it'd be cool.
No, do it. I'm always looking for a hunting buddy. So I would love for you to. It's too difficult for my husband and I both to be able to get away together with the kids. So anytime I can have a friend to go with, because that's not somewhere you want to, I don't know, I guess I'm a pretty confident solo hunter, but I'm not ready to do that by myself, nor do I think I would be productive.
Yeah, so. I think, I don't think I would try and tackle that one by myself either. So yeah. No, we'll have to set something up. Maybe we can get Andy to go with us and
a whole bunch
of us girls do a girl Chucker hunt in Oregon.
For sure. No, we'll talk about that seriously when we're done here. But yeah, let's do it. Game bird. What's your favorite game bird recipe?
Well, you know, I'm pretty simple girl. Probably my favorite is quail breast stuff with jalapenos and cheese and wrapped in bacon on the grill.
It's little quail poppers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I do like to have pheasant.
Okay.
In the crock pot and this is one of my buddy's recipes that I've now used quite a bit, but is pheasant in the crock pot with being a Midwestern girl, you got to have some cream of chicken soup in there and some green chilies, diced green chilies. And it is so good over rice. Yeah.
That does sound good. Really good. Mm-hmm. And you need to give
me sometime.
Your favorite waterfall recipe as well, since you do that quite a bit. How do you like your ducks?
Well, actually, I just really like them. Not really, maybe a little bit of seasoning. Sometimes you can inject the breast with, I don't know, like I've made different concoctions, but I just prefer to just do a little bit of salt and pepper and then just do like little popper things with them. But definitely don't overcook duck, because if you do, it tastes terrible.
Do you fry them or do you like them on the grill? What's your preference?
On the grill.
On the grill.
Yeah,
okay.
On the grill. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you got, I think it's, all of the birds are better if they're wrapped in bacon in my mind, because they're so lean. But, you know, I
now
like
we're talking
too,
the same
so
language.
A little,
little bacon and some
good
butter.
With bacon. Yeah. You can't go wrong with bacon and butter.
And a beer.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Too funny. So. No, we'll have fun hunting.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yes. Well, Stacy, was there anything else that you wanted to mention before we're done here that we haven't chatted about yet?
Not that I can think of. Okay. I just want, you know, people to understand that just get involved in your NAVDA chapter and you learn so much and you just help the whole entire organization when you volunteer. And it doesn't matter for what little, you know, you think it is, but it's a big deal no matter what job it is, whether, you know, you're cleaning burrs after the end of the day, after the test, or, you know, you're planting the burrs or you're bringing food to the test. It's no job is too little and no, none of it goes unrecognized. And it's all important to all of us.
Perfect.
So,
and tell us how we can connect with you. Are you on, do some social media plugs here or a website if to find your
I'm on Instagram now. I'm not the best at social media because I don't have my phone with me a lot in the field because I don't want that distraction. Mm-hmm. So I don't have too many pictures, but people are trying to help me with that. So I am Mom of Porter. At Mom of Porter on Instagram, and our kennel is Oak Creek Kennel.
Okay.
Or at Oak Creek Kennel on Instagram.
On Instagram as well. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. So if somebody wants to reach out to you for some training advice and help, they can connect with you through there?
That's correct.
Okay. Cool. Well, thank you very much, Stacy. I really appreciated getting a chat with you, and I look forward to seeing you in a couple months.
Yeah, it's not too far down the road. And I appreciate it so much, Courtney. Thank you for having me on today.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, share it and tag me and someone that would benefit from listening. And hey, help a girl out by giving the podcast a rating and review on whichever platform you're listening from. Send me a screenshot of your review and I'll mail you out a Bird Dog Babe sticker. Be sure to join me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And if you're interested in some Bird Dog Babe swag or gear that I rely on, be sure to check out the store on thebirddogbabe.com. And most importantly, don't forget to support the sponsors of this podcast and the organizations that are working hard to conserve the birds you're chasing after and the public lands in which you hunt.